School lunches got a makeover this year. Kids are getting served more vegetables, more whole grains, more low-fat or no-fat dairy, and far fewer things that are fried. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we'll talk about the new rules for school lunches. Helen Jensen is a professor of economics at Iowa State University. She'll help us understand how these new rules came into being and what the changes really mean. Alicia Eggers and Cindy Rada are on the front line implementing these new rules in Muscatine schools. We'll talk about how kids are reacting to the new lunches, and later in the hour, we'll find out about two programs that share the goal of getting kids to eat more fruits and vegetables. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. School lunches have gotten leaner and greener this year. This hour, we'll talk about the new rules, changes we're likely to see in the next couple of years, and how the changes that we've seen so far are being received by kids. Later in this hour, we'll also talk about a couple of different programs aimed at getting kids to eat more fruits and vegetables at school and at home. And we want to hear from you throughout the hour this hour. What do your kids think about the new school lunches? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Helen Jensen. She's a professor of economics at Iowa State University. Hello, Helen.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Happy to be here.
Can you give us a quick breakdown on what actually has changed as far as regulations go for school lunches this year?
There were major changes introduced are implemented this year. Primary change is increased fruits and vegetables. There is a move to increase the whole grain component of the grains that are served, and a range on calories. It used to be that the lunches had a minimum calorie, and now there's a range that has both a minimum and a maximum. In addition, there is restrictions on the amount of saturated fat and trans fat.
So in a nutshell, we are seeing more fruits and vegetables. We're seeing more whole grains. We're seeing lower fat items. We're not seeing as many fried foods and as many desserts on a lot of school lunches as well, right?
That's right. And the planning is over the week. So one lunch may be a little different than another, but over the week, the lunches are designed to meet these standards.
And there's an implementation period over 3 years for new regulations. Are we just seeing the beginning of changes?
We are seeing the beginning of changes, and I should mention as well that the new standards apply both to lunch and breakfast. So the changes that we'll see over the next few years apply to both. In particular, the phase-in changes are related to the whole grains, so that now meals reflect half grains are whole. This will move to all whole grains. In addition, there are restrictions on the amount of sodium, and that's phased in over a longer period of time.
So we won't see another radical change in what lunches look like. The changes over the next couple of years, it sounds like, are going to be more invisible to us.
They will be less visible, and students will have a chance to get accustomed to lower sodium in the meals, and that will be changing over time. Whole grains will be phased in, both as students develop, and the schools develop new recipes and menus, and also as the marketplace responds and comes up with new foods that incorporate more whole grains.
Now, of course, school lunch has been a source of controversy for many years. I remember everybody talking about whether ketchup was or was not a vegetable when I was a child, and we've talked about whether pizza is or is not a vegetable in the recent years. Where do these changes come from?
Well, the Department of Agriculture will monitor how well the schools comply with the school meal standards, and they need to set up very specific regulations as to whether or not the tomato in pizza is going to count as vegetable and how ketchup will count. And that's where we get into the fine lines on what counts and what doesn't.
And how much freedom do different school systems have when they implement the new rules?
The school systems have a lot of freedom in terms of the menus that they offer. However, ultimately, the menus are reviewed for whether or not they're accountable to the standards, whether or not the size and frequency and type of vegetable that's offered during the week has met the standards, whether or not the fruit meets the standards and is offered often enough, whether the overall meal meets the fat guidelines on saturated fat, what the range of calories is on average during the week. So all of those are monitored, but what foods specifically are offered can vary.
There have been a lot of school systems that have been trying to make their school lunches healthier and fresher over the last few years. So it's actually possible that there could be a school lunch or a school system where we're not really seeing many changes in the school lunches, right?
That's right. These schools have recognized the need for change and had already begun to make those changes earlier than this year. So for some school districts, it's not a dramatic change. For others, it will be more of a change.
What are some of the main challenges that this poses for school systems? There have been complaints about higher costs for school lunches, for example.
Well, certainly costs is a challenge, and it's always a challenge. It will be a challenge next year as well as we see rising food prices. The schools are trying to introduce new foods, new menus, new items that meet the requirements, that incorporate more whole grains. And kids are facing different choices than they had before. They aren't getting the cheeseburgers as frequently as they had before. They may not be getting pizza because as you move down on the amount of saturated fat, there are some menu items that meet the have lower fat than others, and the cheeseburger or the pizza may be offered occasionally, but not as often.
With lower fat options, are there also controls about the amount of sugar?
There are controls on the amount of sugar, but that's really coming through the calories. As long as the meal itself meets falls within the calorie range, the sugar. It's okay to have dessert every once in a while.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Helen Jensen is a professor of economics at Iowa State University. A new policy is one thing. Let's talk about how it plays out in the school cafeteria. And again, we want to know what your kids are saying. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me now are Alicia Eggers. She is the superintendent of food service with Muscatine Community Schools, and Cindy Rada, who is a registered dietitian with Muscatine Schools. Hello, Alicia.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. And hello, Cindy.
Good morning.
Alicia, how have your lunches changed this year?
Well, I guess that depends on how you're asking. For one, as far as statistics, we're only down about 10 meals per day, which is a great thing. Our goal is to maintain, retain, and increase our participation. So Cindy does the majority of the meal planning, and I deal with the students and parents and staff members.
Okay, so almost as many kids are eating school lunches this year as were eating school lunches last year. And
yes.
Cindy, when those kids get their school lunches, how are they different?
Probably the biggest emphasis is on increasing fruits and vegetables, and one of the new regulations is that students must choose either a fruit or a vegetable, and that's probably one of the biggest changes that they're seeing, but they are doing very well with that. We are seeing kids trying fruits and vegetables that they never have before, so that's a positive.
And are the vegetables that you're serving, are the vegetables and the fruits any different than they might have been in the past?
Probably not different so much in the actual types of vegetables. We have introduced a few new vegetables. We're probably just offering a greater variety so they have more choices every day. We actually did try over the past couple of years, even down in the lower grade levels, to give them at least two choices every day of two fruits and two vegetables. But in some situations, they're even getting more options than that. So I think that maybe helps with their selection of more fruits and vegetables.
I've heard just anecdotally that in some school systems, they're serving maybe more raw vegetables with something to dip them in, that kind of thing. Are you including, say, raw broccoli, that kind of thing, in your lunches?
Yes, but we have done that for the past few years. But, yeah, celery, broccoli, cauliflower, maybe things like grape tomatoes, cucumbers, just a variety of different things.
With the fresh vegetables,
Charity,
one thing that the kids do miss is with the fresh vegetables is us serving peanut butter with celery. We've now changed to serving hummus versus peanut butter as it's a protein.
Oh, okay. And are there other foods that have completely disappeared? So peanut butter's probably not entirely disappeared, but are there foods that they don't see at all anymore?
At our high school level, we're no longer offering fried French fries.
And how have the kids responded to that?
They're really not very happy about that being one of the greatest foods that they love. But they're choosing. I mean, we have a wide variety of selection of fresh fruits and vegetables, so they're adjusting, I think. And that really is the biggest thing right there, is giving time for the adjusting.
Has it changed how you've had to prepare foods?
Oh, sure. There's a little bit more intense, and with the requirements of them having to take a fruit or vegetable each meal. With the menu planning that we used before the new laws changed, we were on a nutrient-based menu planning, so they were required to take the entree and one side versus taking a fruit or a vegetable. So that's new to us, so we're preparing additional fresh fruits and choices than we did versus last year.
So you have a lot more
volume. Greater number, yes. The volume is a lot different, whereas, for example, we may have prepared 500 last year in a middle school, and now we're preparing 1,000.
We need to take a break here. We'll get back to this conversation in just a moment. Alicia Eggers is superintendent of food service with Muscatine Community Schools. Cindy Rada is a registered dietitian with Muscatine Schools. We'll talk more about the changes that they've seen in their district and how kids are reacting to those changes in a moment. Coming up later in the hour, we're going to talk about a couple of different programs that are aimed at getting kids to eat more fruits and vegetables at school and at home. That's coming up in just a moment. And again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about school lunches. There have been some significant changes to school lunches this year, and we've been talking about how lunches have changed. And right now we're focusing on how they've actually been implemented in the school districts, and in particular, we're talking about Muscatine Community Schools right now. With me, Alicia Eggers is a superintendent of food service with Muscatine Community Schools, and Cindy Rada is a registered dietitian with Muscatine Schools. And before the break, we were talking about some of the foods that the kids are not getting anymore. For example, no more French fries in Muscatine Community Schools. With the fruits and vegetables being on the plate, are you seeing kids actually trying things? Are you witnessing that?
They are trying new things. Some of them are being exposed to items that they may possibly have never been exposed to before, such as a fresh pear. Not that we haven't served them before, but with the requirement, I think that it makes students take notice with the requirement of the fruit and vegetable, the taking of fruit or vegetable each day. So I think they are trying things that they've never been exposed to before. And like the hummus, we have not served that before this year, so that is definitely a new item for the kids. And we started out preparing some new recipes over the summer to get some of the kids adjusting to trying new things. And so far, I don't think that there's been a large difficulty. Like I said, at the high school level, the biggest thing was the French fries. The second largest thing, probably district-wide, the first largest thing is the decrease in condiments availability.
And why is that? What's the change there?
Well, at the high school level, they had a condiment bar to where they could just serve themselves the amount of ketchup or mustard or mayonnaise or dill pickles, for instance. And I'll let Cindy talk about dill pickles.
Well, one of the things that the new regulations address is limiting the amount of sodium. And what we were finding is from that condiment bar, students were sometimes getting more sodium from the condiments they were putting on their foods than actually the entree itself. So to meet the sodium guidelines, we have had to limit the portions that students can take. And we have eliminated the pickles entirely, but are limiting portions of ketchup and mustard and some of those other condiment types of things. So,
well, that's interesting. Pickles seem like such a benign food. I mean, there's no fat. There are a few calories.
Right. I mean, they're basically cucumbers, but they've been soaked in salt. And per portion size, they're one of the highest sodium-containing foods actually there are out there. So, yeah.
Cindy, I was talking with Helen a little bit ago about the difference in calories. So would a lunch this year have fewer calories than a lunch would have last year?
It very likely might have a few less calories. To use the high school as an example, last year's school lunches were required to have a minimum. It was around 845 calories per lunch. The new regulations are 750 to 850 calories per day, but there is that maximum now of 850 calories where we didn't have a maximum last year. But okay. What was interesting, last year there was a national study done of high school students consuming school lunch, and nationally this study showed that high school students were offered about 857 calories per day. And based on their selections, what they actually took in line, they were selecting about 787 calories per lunch per day, which falls right in, you know, the middle of these new guidelines.
So you're not seeing a big caloric difference?
No, I mean, it's probably a little bit less. Probably the biggest thing, and again, probably most of our comments have come from the high school age group. I think maybe one of the biggest thing is when it comes to submarine sandwiches, we used to serve a little bit larger portion of bread and meat and cheese, and so now we're still serving the subs, but they're a little bit smaller portion of bread in order to meet the grain requirements, a little bit smaller portion of meat and cheese to meet the weekly meat maximum kinds of things. So it's just maybe a little bit smaller portions on some items, particularly entrees, but other items, our portions last year were meeting essentially the new regulations already.
Okay, Jim is on the line from Iowa City. Hi, Jim.
Yeah.
Hi, what are your kids saying about school lunches?
Well, they can't stand the portion sizes. I got, like I said, like I was telling the screener earlier, I've got two boys, both in high school, that both play football that are very low in body fat. They can't get enough calories, and their friends and them are literally starving and can't practice the way they need to practice on the football and sports fields anymore. They just don't have the energy because they don't have the lunch, so they've started supplementing in their lockers all the food that they can't get at lunch or breakfast anymore.
Well, I'm curious about the change. I mean, I was just asking Cindy, and she was saying that the caloric count for the lunches is really very similar.
They're saying they can't take extra portions anymore.
Oh, I see.
And some of these football players are packing down, you know, huge portions of calories and burning huge calories every day after school.
So it's changed in not just what the makeup of the lunch is, but they can't get additional food like they used to be able to.
And that's what I'm being told.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't speak for Iowa City schools, but in Muscatine schools, they can buy additional items. But Cindy's got some comments that are very interesting regarding the athletic students.
Athletes do need more calories than what the typical teen does. But what you have to look at is what is the audience, so to speak. And the vast majority of students in high schools are not football players. And so the new regulations do meet the nutritional needs for the vast majority of those students. Typically, students 14 to 18 years old need approximately 1,800 to 2,400 calories per day. Now, that 2,400 calories per day, granted, is probably not going to be enough for a linebacker on the football team. But our lunches last year also probably were not enough to meet the needs of that football player. So I think it's a good idea for any young person involved in athletics to plan healthy snacks and maybe taking those things to put it in their locker before practice is really a sound nutritional thing to do.
Now, I remember when I was in high school seeing a lot of the basketball players and the football players just buy two lunches when they went through the line. Is that kind of thing possible in Muscatine these days?
It is possible in Muscatine, and I can tell you that it has been happening. We're trying some different things on offering unlimited fruits and vegetables to try to increase the consumption. So we're trying a variety of different things and hope that, like I said before, we can maintain, retain, and increase our participation in school meals, because it's definitely our goal to still have the best part of our students' day be the lunch program.
Now, I have one more important question for you before you go. What has the difference been in terms of waste? Are you seeing a lot more food getting thrown away with the new regulations?
Well, we've always had waste in food service, and even from the standpoint of hiring new people, I do warn them ahead of time that there is going to be food waste. The way that we feel like this is an opportunity for us to become creative with natural spices, flavorings, to try to eliminate so much waste. And we also have sharing tables implemented in our school district so that other students can share. They can share the food that they may not want, and someone else that is still hungry might be able to come grab the apple that the other student didn't want, or the orange.
Oh, an interesting idea. But have you had more garbage cans to take out this year?
No, we really have not seen that. And maybe it's still too soon yet. But like I said, with the participation, you know, has only gone down an average of 10 meals per day. That's not very significant.
Are you happy with the changes, Cindy?
I think some changes in nutritional changes in the school lunches were long overdue. About a third of the kids in the U.S. are overweight and obese, and I think that, there definitely were some changes due. Like everything else, there's, you know, trying to implement the new changes. There are some challenges, and we're still working with those things. And like I say, there are a few things that perhaps could be tweaked a little bit. But I think overall, the new regulations are heading school lunch in the direction they need to be going.
All right. Cindy Rada, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Charity?
Yes.
I would like to make a correction if I could, please.
Sure.
My title is I'm the food and nutrition supervisor, not superintendent. I'd hate to get I really would not want his job.
All right. Food and nutrition supervisor.
Yes.
Alicia, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Alicia Eggers and Cindy Rada, both of Muscatine Community Schools. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. And it's one thing to give kids access to healthier food. It's another thing to get them to actually eat it. The Pick a Better Snack program is designed to do just that, going into kindergarten through third grade classrooms across the state to introduce new foods and give the kids a chance to try them. In a moment, I'll talk with Jan Temple of Iowa State University Extension, one of the people behind the program. We weren't able to get into a classroom to talk to kids, but I did sit down in my kitchen with a second grader who I'm very close to, my daughter, Audrey. She's had only two Pick a Better Snack lessons so far, but I asked her what she's been learning.
We've learned about all kinds of plums and also tomatoes.
So you've talked about two different kinds of snacks. What else does the teacher tell you?
How to be polite, and it's good to wash your hands. And if you don't like it, don't say it out loud until everybody has tried it.
Why is that important?
Because then somebody might copy you and say, "Ew, I don't like it either."
And you got to try a snack on the very first day?
Yeah, we did. It was a lot of kinds of plums.
Three kinds. Three different kinds of plums? What was your favorite kind?
The apricot, which is a mixture between a plum and an apricot, but there's more apricot than plum.
Did you like all of them?
No.
Really? Did you say it out loud?
No.
What, and then you had a tomato the second time?
Yeah.
What did you think of the tomato?
I didn't like it.
Does everybody in class try the new snack? Is that a rule?
Yes, they have to try everything.
And does everybody follow that rule?
Yes. They're really excited, of course.
When you look around our kitchen right now and you see what's in the kitchen, do you see something that would make a healthy snack?
Yeah. I see some apples.
That would be a good choice. Anything else that looks good?
Eggs.
Yeah, that's a more unusual snack, isn't it? But they would be a healthy choice, wouldn't they? What's your favorite thing to have as a snack?
A nectarine.
Well, that's a healthy choice right there. Do you think that you've already learned a lot from Pick a Better Snack?
Yes, I think I have.
What do you think you've learned?
That healthy choices are very important. To wash your hands is very important. Now I do that more often. And to not have as much junk food as, you know, you usually have.
Or as you might want, right?
Yeah. That's what I thought I should say.
Oh, well, Audrey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's my daughter, Audrey, and she has had two Pick a Better Snack lessons in her classroom. Pick a Better Snack, as I mentioned, is a program designed to get kids eating more fruits and vegetables. A number of groups are working together to implement the program, and one of those groups is Iowa State University Extension. Jan Temple is here with me today from ISU Extension. Jan, this is a program that stretches across K through third grade curriculum if schools want to participate. How... Give me a sort of a, explain the program to me. How does it work?
Well, it originated with Iowa State Extension, but the original grant to go with this is through the Iowa Department of Public Health. So they really need to get some credit for this. But the restrictions for the Iowa Department of Public Health is that it had to be tied to percent of students in a school receiving free and reduced lunch. In Johnson County, we felt that it was important for all students to have an opportunity to eat more fruits and vegetables. So we have used local money to make this available. So, yeah, and it really varies so that people that are listening to this throughout the state of Iowa may know the program in many different ways because there is that latitude to morph the program to the needs. But here within this area of Johnson, Iowa, Keokuk, and Washington counties, yes, we focus on first and second grade. Sometimes we go on even up as high as sixth grade, depending on our funds and the needs. What happens, we do a 30-minute program. Within that 30 minutes, we talk about the produce item. We allow the students to sample it, and we do some type of nutrition lesson that goes along with that. And we try to do 9 weeks in a row, so that and every time that the nutrition educator goes to the classroom, the students are having an opportunity to try a new fruit or vegetable. So just as your daughter Audrey, is it?
Yes.
She had an opportunity to try plums. Many students have never had a fresh plum, nor do they realize what a dried plum is. So there are times they get to try those. We even find apples, something as simple as an apple. Some students have only had one apple in their life, so usually the educators will try to take several different apples and let the students try those. But we do a variety of different produce items within those nine each year. Sometimes they're introduced, well, tomatoes, a lot of times that can be something that younger students in particular may not quite have developed a liking of tomatoes. But just as your daughter shared, when we teach Pick a Better Snack, we don't, it's one of the rules that you're brave and you try something new and you don't say, oh, yuck, that is not allowed because it may be someone else's favorite.
Right.
So,
well, and I can imagine that if one particularly influential child says, oh, yuck, you can have a whole classroom of kids rejecting a food based on that opinion.
Exactly. And so it really is a wonderful program then for introducing students to a variety of fruits and vegetables.
We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. I'm talking with Jan Temple of Iowa State University Extension. She's based in Johnson County. Coming up, we'll also talk about a program aimed at getting local foods into local schools. That's in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about healthier food for kids. We've been talking about the school lunch program and changes there. But as we mentioned earlier, it's one thing to give kids healthy food. It's another thing to get kids to actually put that food in their mouth and swallow it. So right now we're talking about the Pick a Better Snack program. And with me is Jan Temple. She is Region 15 Nutrition Food Safety Program Director. And so, Jan, it sounds like this program can be implemented in a number of different ways. We've been talking about what you've been doing in Johnson County and the surrounding district, and bringing these foods into the classroom. Does getting a kid to try a food once, do you think that makes a difference?
Yeah, we do know that, like in working with child care providers and such, that it can take up to 17 different exposures. But there are times that there's a real blessing that a child will sample something within a classroom with their peers that a parent may have tried how many times at home and tried to serve it a number of different ways and it just not been successful. But when they're in that classroom, I have some very gifted educators. I can't cut them, I have to give them credit for being as skilled as they are. The student will sample something and realize, oh, I really do like this. And I was telling you before the show that I have actually witnessed being in the grocery store and there being a young student who was arguing with his mother that he wanted clementines. And they were in season, so it was a reasonable price. And she's saying, but you always get a Snickers bar for a snack. And he's saying, I know, but I love clementines. And the mother was really struggling with purchasing those. So we as adults need to make sure that we are setting a good example. And yes, if a child is asking for a healthy snack, to do our part to make that a possibility.
Make it possible, if at all reasonable.
Yes.
Well, that is interesting. I think sometimes we have the expectation that this is something that our child will not eat. So
exactly.
Do you think that's something that the best intentioned parent runs up against?
Exactly. And with food costs continuing to go up, I mean, if I don't think my child's going to eat fresh broccoli, I'm not going to put the money out for it. But if through this program they have learned and they're saying, no, I love broccoli and I even know how to fix it, that's one of the things that we're striving for so that they have learned. And we try very hard in serving this snack. So that is like when we serve fresh broccoli, they eat just broccoli. It's not drenched.
It's not about ranch dip.
It's not about ranch dip. And to also things like fresh spinach. there are times there can be that connotation that, ooh, I don't think I'm going to like that. But when they have an opportunity to sample it in a nurturing environment, it's just that much better. And we're also learning, trying to cooperate then with some of the gardening programs that within the Iowa City School District, we have a number of school gardens. And we know that to talk about nutrition with kids is good. To allow them an opportunity to sample it, that increases their acceptability that much more. And if they would have an opportunity to have gardening and sampling, that lasts a lifetime. And we know that that really does increase the likelihood that they will eat more fruits and vegetables as an adult. So,
do the kinds of things that you introduce change from lesson plan to lesson plan? Or
they will change with the season and with the year. So there are some things that, you know, this is Iowa. We're always going to have apples. So we'll, you know, with each of it, because we kind of have a fall, a winter, and a spring 9-week session. And so with those, yes, apples are almost always a part of that. But we don't have the same apples that we take each time right. either. But pumpkin is something that we may do as a snack in the fall, but you don't think of pumpkin in April. So, yeah, that we wouldn't do then. But, yeah, we try to vary. And we also try to make sure that students have an opportunity to experience the fresh, but also realize that they're canned and frozen versions and dried, so they can see what the different forms that produce can come in and increase their acceptability of those.
Before the break, we were talking a little bit about how if the rule is that you can't say you don't like something out loud, because then everybody else would be like, oh, I don't like it either. Did you try in designing the program to harness peer pressure in your favor, though? Having a whole room full of kids trying something, is that part of the magic of
well,
the program?
Well, it is. It is part of the magic that, because if you have just a, that, the it's a science that, yes, taking advantage of peer pressure to your advantage, whereas, yeah, in an individual home, that may not happen. So
I was looking at your website, and it looks like you have ways for parents to interact with this program as well. If
yes.
parents are looking for more information, or maybe this isn't something that's done at your school, how can a parent try this out?
Through the Iowa Department of Public Health, if you were just to Google Pick a Better Snack, or if some other, you know, school district is interested in implementing something like this, all the materials that have been developed through the Iowa Department of Public Health, the Pick a Better Snack program, are available online. So, you know, schools can try to implement something within their own schools. And parents can use some of these materials even at home to try to encourage healthier eating.
You've been watching all of the changes in school lunches very closely. Obviously, this is something that's extremely important to you. How do you feel about the new changes this year?
Well, having just recently attended a seminar on obesity in children, and one of the things they mentioned is that 150 calories a day is cumulatively over a year, just 150 extra calories a day is what, you know, going by the numbers, is making the difference between our students being healthy and being overweight to obese. So when we're in this big quandary over how many calories a student is consuming, I very much agree with Cindy that, yes, for the most part, this is the right move. For the dad that called in and said, yeah, his football players just aren't getting enough. I can recall at one point earlier in my career when we were with the old pyramid that was the stacked boxes, yes, doing some research on a student athlete that, yeah, they really needed two pyramids of food a day. So when Muscatine is able to provide students two meals that's some of our students are going to need that. The majority of them do not. And so I would encourage parents that if you are concerned, very calmly approach school food service and have a discussion. But sometimes there are a lot of different rules, and our school districts are trying very hard to meet many different requirements at this time. So, yeah, it's going to be a gradual process to get this through.
But you feel like things are moving in the right
direction.
Yes,
I feel like it is in the right direction, and I should probably get in a plug for Iowa State Extension that we do. If you think your children aren't getting enough and you want to send some food, they just came out with a new publication. Ask for PM 3026, What's for Lunch? It's in the Bag, an excellent publication.
Unpacking school lunches.
Yes, unpacking school lunches and doing it safely, because we don't want students getting sick because we've not packed those sandwiches safely.
Jan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jan Temple is Region 15 Nutrition and Food Safety Program Director, and we've been talking about the Pick a Better Snack Program. You can find more information about that online. And finally this hour, Elizabeth McCarowitz is one of a number of people around the state working to get more locally grown food into schools. She is a Food Corps service member and resource contact for Valley, Postville, and Olwine schools. Hello, Elizabeth.
Greetings from beautiful Northeast Iowa.
Nice to talk to you today. And first of all, what is Food Corps?
Food Corps is a nationwide team of leaders that connects kids to real food and helps them grow up healthy. So through my service with Food Corps, I am trained to do food education, build and tend school gardens, and also help food service get more fresh and locally sourced, whenever possible, food into the cafeterias.
So what have you done to make that happen?
So we do a lot of work with school gardens, and this year with the new food regulations, we are helping our food service a lot with those regulations, and also helping them to implement a new menu that will help them order more local foods and use stuff from the garden. To give a specific example, one of the schools I work with is Postville Community School District in Almaquie County, and they have a really amazing garden there. It's a community garden, and about a third of that garden goes towards is dedicated towards the school. So every Monday evening, I meet with, along with several other very dedicated community volunteers, a bunch of elementary kids, and that garden is tended almost completely by those elementary kids. And they do all the harvesting and growing, and everything that's harvested from that garden either goes home with the kids or straight to the cafeteria. So Postville's very lucky. They have a really great food service director who is willing to receive that stuff from the garden and serve it in the lunch line. So whenever I'm eating lunch with the kids there in Postville with the garden club members, their eyes really light up when they see something they grew on their tray. And not only are they more likely to try that roasted squash or whatever it is, but they're also, you know, pushing their friends to eat it as well.
Again, harnessing the power of peer pressure in a positive way, hopefully. When talking about school gardens, that is a trend. They're growing nationwide. Many, many schools now have school gardens. But one of the big problems that we have is that the growing season doesn't line up very well with the school year. So how do you get kids involved in coming to the garden all summer long?
Well, Postville's garden works pretty well because it's right smack dab in the middle of town. It's right next to a town park. So we actually had pretty great attendance over the summer. We just kind of tried to make it a really fun thing. We do a lot of cooking activities. There were incentives for the students to attend garden club. So if they put in a certain amount of hours, they could get a T-shirt or a water bottle, or the ones who put in the most hours get their name on a plaque that's posted at the front of the garden. And for fourth and fifth graders, those are really great incentives to get you out of the house and into the garden.
How many kids did you have involved this summer?
Probably at the most, about 20 students.
And how big do you think the district is? I mean, what kind of percentage do you think that represents?
Oh, let's see. So in the elementary, there are about 300 students. So it's a relatively small district, but and we have those kids who are out in the garden also telling their friends about being in the garden. And so throughout the summer, it grew quite a bit. And I don't know, I think awareness in the school of the garden is pretty high, and that counts.
Can you give me an example of just one student that you saw this summer who was really affected by this experience in the garden?
Just one student. Wow, that's really hard to pinpoint because there are so many. But I will say that, you know, there are some students that get more excited than others. And it's like whenever I walk into the school building and they see me, they have something to tell me either about their garden at home or something that they saw in the cafeteria or a new food that they're trying. It could probably tell you a thousand stories about kids getting excited about that little garden.
So it's wonderful to get the food from the garden into the school. I can see how kids would get very excited about that. Why do you think it's important to get other locally grown food into schools where the kids may not have a personal connection with the food, but why does it make a difference to have that on their tray?
Well, it's really great for the local economy, for one. I mean, we're here in Northeast Iowa where farming has been a way of life for, you know, hundreds of years, and we have all of this great access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And actually, at this point, we know that the demand is higher than what our farmers are producing. So to grow those local foods economies, that's just another, schools are another opportunity to make those connections between, with the farmers, with the local farmers.
Is there a specific kind of food that has really taken off? I mean, you mentioned roasted squash, and my husband loves to tell the story about when all of a sudden, when he was in elementary school, all the kids loved mixed vegetables and would go back for seconds of mixed vegetables, and the lunch ladies were shocked. But is there a food that in Postville has gotten very popular that has surprised you?
Let's see. Zucchini is very, very popular. We do a roasted zucchini. The squash, again, I think is pretty popular. This past summer, so in addition to having the community garden where the kids work, we installed garden beds right next to the cafeteria. So our food service director, she can go out every morning when tomatoes are in season and pick cherry tomatoes to put those fresh out on the salad bar. And those have been very popular.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, Elizabeth, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Makarowicz is one of, as I mentioned, a number of people around the state working to get more locally grown food into school. She's a Food Corps service member and the resource contact for Valley, Postville, and Olwine schools. This hour we've talked about new regulations in school lunch programs. We've talked about the Pick a Better Snack program. And if you want to take a closer look at what's going on in the schools in Muscatine, we talked about in particular their programs, you can go to our website or our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio, and click on a link and find out about what's going on and how kids feel about not having French fries in Muscatine. So you can look more into that as well. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We got production assistance today from Allison Sullivan, technical support from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to hear your reaction to things that you've heard on the air. We'd love your suggestions as well. If there's something you'd like to hear on the air, or you know someone who has a great story to tell, let us know about it. talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on the show, I'll talk with author Jim Autry. His new book is Choosing Gratitude, Learning to Love the Life You Have. It was published in June. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.